Hi, you're listening to Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters 7/7 Stylists of Influence interview with today's guest, Michael Dial of Peter Mark. Hi, everybody out there in the world of Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters, and welcome to another interview in our series of 7/7 Stylists of Influence. And today I've got an amazing man, I've looked in awe of his career because I was with Peter Mark for a long time, and this man was just such an inspiration with his creativity and his fun attitude to his career. And I always found that he'd done his job with passion, but he also done it with a big smile on his face. And it's Michael Dial from Peter Mark. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how are you, Greg?
I'm great. So a little bit about Michael. Michael started his career more years than he cared to remember. That's probably where. And I'll let you give the exact figure if you want. In above a butcher shop in Waterford, and we can go that into that in a little bit more detail. You've won multiple awards. You've led the team of Peter Mark at many a show at the L'Oreal Colour Trophy, and I think we'd love to go into that a little bit about how you got the team together, how it works, how you get the whole event to work. You've judged some of the top competitions, not just in hairdressing, but in fashion, in models, in everything. You know what I mean? So you're a real go-to guy within our creative industry, not just for hair, but for fashion, for beauty, for everything that encapsulates our industry, which is the people industry. And NCAD graduate shows, Peter Mark have sponsored them for years, and I think you've been involved in that for 13 years, and we go into that a little bit more. But let's start at the very beginning. Why did you choose hairdressing as a career, Michael?
But you know what it was, Greg? Like, I was like Cinderella in my family. I've got four sisters, and I always messed around with hair. I always cut hair. I didn't know what I was doing. Always dressed hair. I can remember one time, I was probably in fifth year in school, and I kind of worked it out. My mom was quite a creative woman, and I worked it out. If I put a plastic shopping bag over my head and got a crochet hook, I could pull strands of my own hair out with a semi-permanent product. What the hell was I thinking about? But I did it.
How old were you then?
15.
15.
Yeah.
I probably started experimenting, but I was getting would-be hair. I wasn't putting a plastic bag in my head, but I was getting young hairdresser friends of mine to, do you want to put a few highlights in my hair? Yeah, probably around the same.
Yeah. And okay. I think it's just like working it out and like going, okay, you know, obviously back in the day, now that I'm 25, not, but back in the day, you kind of went, oh, I come from the country and obviously I'm gay, but you didn't want people to know that, so you kind of go, oh no, the sun did it, not me.
And so did your mum encourage you more to take it up? Did she spot it and say, geez, I think this could be a job there for you?
Unfortunately, my mum passed away when I was 16, but like, she was creative, and I think as we get older, I look back on things that she would have taught me or said to me, but still keep with me. So she was probably ahead of her time in how she looked at things. And I think that's been a help to me in my career, of kind of not being afraid. Obviously, when you're younger, you have that fear of, oh, will I look stupid? Oh, I can't do that. But just kind of open your mind.
Yeah.
And it's like if you look back, you kind of go, oh, the things, I can't do that. By all accounts, you can. And you learn by your mistake. Nobody's perfect.
And where were you in the lineup with your sisters? Were you the middle? Were you the bottom? Were you the top?
I was the second youngest. I got away with murder.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my family was like two families. There was three, a gap of 9 years, and then the next three. Don't ask me what happened in the 9 years. I wouldn't have a clue. They probably needed a break. Yeah. But it was like the older ones. obviously your parents are more strict, a learning curve for them, having three kids, and you can't go to that dance, so you have to go to math, so you have to, you know, all those things.
So when did you leave school? You left school?
I didn't leave cert. My mum passed away in August. In September, I went into my 6th year in school. So I was actually young. I was 16. So I finished my leaving cert at the age of 17.
And I think I just want to dip into that a little bit, Michael, because there's young people out there today, hopefully that will be listening to this and watching, because that's what this is about. It's about giving inspiration and showing people. And sometimes people, I think young people now take on too much and worry about things. But like when you think of it, at 16 years of age, you lost your mom, you completed your exams, and then you started a career like at 16. You know, we're not generally asking young people to not even think about starting a career till around 18 now. You know what I mean? So yeah. What were some of your coping mechanisms back then, do you think?
Do you know what I think? Kind of putting things to rest. A lot of it would have been in respect to my mum. Of kind of going, I know this is what she would want. And my dad as well would have been like, you know, I remember summertime when in the sunny southeast, when we had summers and the weather was warm, 8 o'clock in the morning, he'd come into my bedroom, pull the curtains open, go, morning, get up now, don't waste a day. And I'd be going, in the name of Jesus, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, I have no school, what is he doing? But, you know, things like that, like, I have this whole thing of where we are now in the industry. And young people, the seasoned ones like yourself and myself, are still on the selling floor. And I know I went through times, I loved working with long hair, went through times where maybe I felt a bit, ooh, about my hair cutting. Go and talk to an elder lemon in the salon, because they were you back in that day.
Yeah.
And don't never be embarrassed. Like I had this thing of kind of going, oh, if I ask that question, they think I'm stupid, or they think you're not going to be good hairdresser.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. You were showing a chink in your arm or like a weakness there.
Yeah. Whereas somebody you look up to, they kind of could turn around and say to you, oh my God, I was absolutely crap at that. But I learned how to do it in a different way.
But that you're actually leading lovely into my second question. I swear I set you up for that one. And what was the toughest challenge you had when learning the craft of hairdressing? What area did you feel? Oh, jeepers, I'll never grasp this.
Finger waves.
Finger waving.
Finger waves. And I still can't. But I have my own way of doing them.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's an amazing lady in Peterborough called Kiva. And she's a hairdresser. She's a hairdressing.
I remember.
And Kiva, a hairdresser. Yeah. Oh, amazing lady. Like, I was so proud. I remember calling Kiva at one stage and said, look, I need your help. She said, what do you need my help for? And I was doing the L'Oreal 50th anniversary show. And I wanted to bring it back to, sometimes I try to be too clever and too out there, going like, to me, underwear is underwear. It's not outerwear.
Yeah, gotcha.
But bring it, yeah, and bring it back to the classic. So you wouldn't, like the old cliche, build a house on a swamp. And boring as it may be, your day-to-day training, if it's good training, and I've said Peter Mark are very good at training, is if you don't have good training, you'll never become a good hairdresser. You can wing it, but it's the foundation. It's like any career. It's the foundation of the rock solid basic. And the amazing thing about Kiva, that was the first time in 50 years that she'd taken part in the show. And I was so proud.
Yeah. Because she was doing stuff. Yeah, she was showing stuff that she done. Not that this was breakthrough. This was my bread and butter going back in the day. And now you want me to show it again? Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah.
If you were to go back to your young self, what advice would you give yourself?
Do you know what? I'd probably believe myself more. Mm. Yeah, I took risks. But you do it in a quiet way, and then you question yourself, go, well, they might laugh at me, or they might think I'm stupid, or I think it's just self-belief. And that's age as well. You know, you're at that age, you're looking at the people you work with, or your friends, or your situation. But sometimes just talk and go, I have this idea.
Yeah, I think imposter syndrome is a big thing that seems to crop up, I find, with people now that, you know, for all the success they've had, there's times they've been on the outside looking in and going, I shouldn't be here. Oh, how did I get here? You know what I mean? Like they
100%.
I don't feel worried, where they actually should be celebrating the fact that, Jesus, look at me. I've worked so hard to get here. So going back to that original salon, the butcher shop, above the butcher shop, what was the name of it?
Called Oliver Bible. It's a butcher Bible.
Butcher. And how many years did you train? Did you do all your training there?
Oh, do you know what? Oliver was great. He was part of the Witch's Hut, which is a big institution. Went back to Waterford, opened a salon. And to be honest, art was where I was going from school. That's what I wanted to pursue. I headed to Germany 3 days after my leaving cert. And worked on a building site, believe it or not, and spent more time there than I should have because I was earning money. But my dad has come back to opening the curtains at 8 o'clock in the morning. You wouldn't sit in your laurels, you know, it wouldn't be allowed. You have to get up and make the most today. So I just walked into the salon and said, are you looking for anybody to get the steam off my back? I said, yeah. But he threw me in at the deep end. And I remember doing a wedding fair. I was probably there 5 months. And he says, why don't you sketch some hairstyles? Now, thinking back, what the hell was I thinking of it? I hate to see what the sketches were like. But yeah, I did it. And it threw me in at the deep end. So I spent 2 years there. Then I came to Dublin for a seminar and ended up meeting somebody, which took me to the UK.
And then, so who did you work for in the UK then?
Went to the UK. I got a job in a salon. And to be honest with you, I was winging it. I only had 2 years experience. And within 6 months, I was asked to become assistant manager of the salon above people who've been there for years. And I go, say nothing, run with it. And that's what I did.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's funny, actually, that I'm going to throw a bit of a bouquet at our Irishness. That it's funny that sometimes Irish people that go abroad seem to climb the ladder fairly quickly at what they do. I don't know whether it's true necessity or just is there a drive in us to kind of say, I'm going to prove myself worthy here. There's people have this view of Irish people. Well, I'm going to change that view. And because if I look at yourself and even like Carol Ann McGork, you know what I mean? That when you went there, you shun, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like a funny story. I can remember Bo Gwilym's first wedding, not second, down in Florence. So I think being Irish, you just get yourself stuck in. Yeah. You know what needs to be done. You know which time frame is. And it's the magic thing about us. And it's the Irishness. I was speaking to this lady after dinner at the wedding. And she was lovely. Lovely tea dress and very, like, you know, London. Like, we'd go into London and go, be Jesus. That's good. Fashion, London. But we're chatting. She, oh, my God, Vogue looks so beautiful today. Should her hair up, and then 30 minutes after the service at the beautiful drinks reception, her hair was shaken out and she looked like a beautiful girl enjoying the moment. I said, yeah, that'll be a bit soon with me. She beg your pardon. I said, well, the veil that she wore, the hair had to be up. But Vogue is much more beachy. She's tomboy. She's a great girl. I said, I'm a hairdresser. She said, oh, you must have been busy today. I said, yeah, 10 heads in 4 hours. She said, what? 10 heads in 4 hours. She said, you must have lost an assistant. I said, no, just myself. Sweating like a pig. But she ended up being the editor of Hello magazine, who were obviously okay and Hello were covering the whole thing. And she said, oh my God. I said, yeah, we're Irish, that's the way we rock. And she must have taken lots of trials to get the perfect up style and the perfect down style. It's no Vogue contacted me from Australia. And actually, I was doing Andrea Roach's wedding in Ibiza when she called. And we met for coffee. I said, pull up images you like, I'll pull up images I like. And her two favorite images were what we did on the day. I said, okay, let's book a trial. And she said, why do you think of booking it? No, it'll be grand. You know, and it's that trust between your client or your friend and your hairdresser. Like, without knowing it, we build that trust over time.
Mm.
And then we take control. It's like, I have a client and they go, oh, I think I'd like X, Y, or Z in my hair. I go, you're mental. You chop the head off me if I did that to you. I know. It's not allowed. It's not going to suit you. Like, I remember being asked in an interview before.
No, if I was to go into the next question, because it's where you've read these questions. I know I send them on to you, but you're leaving lovely in, because my next question is, because this is what I really, really want to know, Michael, because...
Oh, shite.
No, you still walk on the floor and you work in a big salon. So you see people around you all that coming through. What do you feel makes an amazing stylist?
You know, when I was an educator with L'Oreal, and I always put this into seminars that I did, and don't get this the wrong way, but you're functional stylists, and we all, like, I'd be a functional stylist, but they're the people who take the 9 o'clock appointment, the last one at 5:30. They don't want to know any more after that. And that's allowed, and that's great. But then you've got your creative stylist, and they go, oh, do you know what? She only booked in for highlights. Why not do balayage? Why not add some baby lights? Why not? Like, they're creative.
Mm.
They finish when they finish the last client. I think that's the difference. And there's room for both of those in a workplace and a creative space. It's like, you know, sometimes I would have bashed myself on the head going, I'm so exhausted, but I can't wait to see the end result.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, it's been out there.
It's the love of what you do.
It is, it's passion.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't have passion, it's like, I know nothing about laying bricks. If I think I know it all in my world of hair or fashion, it's time to give up, because nobody ever knows it all.
No, that's, well, you're a big believer. And we all need, leading lovely into the next question, we all need mentors and inspirers. So who would have been mentors to you or inspiration to you throughout your career?
Sam McKnight is somebody I always looked up to. You see, I'm into kind of organic hair, and they laugh at me in the salon, particularly younger people. So, organic hair, what's that? And I go, it's feel appeal. It's like, over the years with Off the Rails and different programs, I've done makeovers. And obviously you watch other people in their approach, their work. But I would spend time talking to the person, because if you put yourself on TV, and you feel that your boobs are too big or your hips are too big or you don't have confidence, that's a huge thing. You're laying your soul out there. And I think as hairdressers, that's what our clients do to us. They tell you they're most vulnerable. Mm. Whereas I would look at that person getting out of the shower in the morning, what you can create in the salon, that person is not going to be able to create. So your cut is so important. Your correct colour is so important. So they can get out of the shower, shake their hair. Yeah, when they want the big curly blow dry, don't come to me. But it's wearability. They have to kind of feel that confidence that, okay, he did this, but I can do the same. If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And then if we go to some of your show work that you've done, like you've done, I don't know, what, five, I think, shows at the L'Oréal Colour Trophy over the years. And you've done the big 50th anniversary as well. When you're putting that together, what do you be looking for team members when you're going out there? Because it's a team effort, isn't it? I know you said, you know, you do the wedding and that was a solo thing, but when something like that, a show, you can't come together on your own. What do you be looking for in a team, you know?
Do you know where I come from that? And like, it was very lucky to like lead a team of 18 creative people. And it's like going back to finger waves. So say for the 50th anniversary show, and that was a great show to get. And I went, okay, let's go back to basics. What happened in Paris 50 years ago? So it's almost like you're seeing a movie, but you have to create the movie and stick to your conviction. So like 18 creative people in the same room at the same time. And so you've got three different sections to the show. We're nosy. We go, oh, what are you doing that? Oh, no, I did this and I did that. So I come up with this concept of you put everybody into their comfort zone, the things they're passionate about, and then get a team leader. And it became magic. Like L'Oréal at that time said to me, do you mind if we actually advise people to do the same?
Mm.
So basically, you had people with a passion for what they were doing and they were enjoying it. And the team leaders and myself then would meet. I might go pull it back here or pump that up a bit. Or so it was a really comfortable place. I think when we work in a comfortable place, we excel.
Yeah, I think actually that works. If you look in the salon now, and I believe this is where it's gone. I've talked to my own team about it, is that you used to feel the word hairdresser, right? When you think that's hairdresser, never hairstylist, but it was like one size fits all. You as an individual were expected to do everything. And I feel it's gotten to the stage now where, you know, find what your passion is. So if your passion happens to be dressing hair, well, then that's what you're going to build your foundation. If it happens to be doing great balayage, that's where your foundation is.
Yeah.
You know, it was like giving girls gent and Peter, when I worked in Peter Morgan, they give it, I hate doing gents, don't like them. And yet we would insist and go, well, you have to do them. And I go, now I'd go, no, you don't. Why? Because I don't want you looking after a guest that you're not comfortable doing. So you give them to the best person. So if somebody says, I'm amazing at cutting bobs, right, well, then that's where you're going. That's where, and you look, and people go, God, you see loads of bobs going out with her. Yeah, because that's her area. And would you agree that that's, I think, the way the industry's gone?
100%. And it's like, it's going back to honesty and going, okay, what you excel at? What makes you excited? Because it's mundane if you're going, okay, say somebody, it's the balayage, I would have named it airbrushing.
Hmm.
We all heard about balayage. It was kind of going, what's balayage? You say to clients, balayage? What's balayage? To me, it's freehand work of airbrushing. So you have a creative eye. You pick up a piece, you blend it away. You know, there are rules. But it's up to that person how creative they want to be with it. Whereas your function functional hair person might go, okay, I'm much more comfortable with mesh because it's more conditioned.
Yeah, yeah.
It's less freehand. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That'd be me.
Well, I'd be pebbling that on the walls at this stage.
On the show front again, I always ask it. I always, because I always feel you watch these shows, and for they're a short time, but there's a lot of work goes into them. And you can't, I always sit back and go, wonder what their inspiration. Where did they get the inspiration for that? Whether it be military, whether it's, as you said, going back to basics. So, you know, you've done fight. You know, do you get together with people or do you leave it to one person to give up? Well, we'll let them come up with the team for the show and we'll all tag in behind.
That's an interesting conversation. The question. I think you have to be slightly bonkers. Okay, I'll give you a scenario. So, back in the day with IHF. Okay, so Mabel Ada Art asked me to compete in the AAPP Awards. So Angela Seminaro, who I respect, loved this whole, did this whole sushi thing. So it's like layering hair and textured hair and rolling it and cutting it, and it looks like sushi.
Yeah.
So all the elements were there. Beautiful model, great makeup artist. Got the clothes from NCAD, very Chanel inspired. But it was hair just in competition. So on Saturday evening, because I was busy all that week, the competition was on a Monday. I started to make my sushi. 5 hours later, I'm still making sushi. Would look nothing like sushi. I'm going, okay, I'm running out now of my bales of hair. I'm just put it down, walk away. And sometimes we need to do that. It's just walk away from it. Because you get frustrated. So we did the Henry Street on a Sunday afternoon, bought another load of hair. And I went, okay, just play. I had to come up with something. So I just created this thing. It was actually a very easy technique. Where I mixed hair, sprayed it, turned upside down when I wired it, and it opened up like thistles. So I made 30 of them. I gave myself an hour and a half to apply them to the model's hair. Took me 20 minutes. Now, I couldn't tell him really at that stage because it actually looked very dramatic.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And that's why I think you need to walk away and go, okay, it's not working out. Park it. Impressive. And my proudest moment was walking out in the Royal Albert Hall in front of 5,000 people representing Ireland. And it was great. And I'd say to anybody who enters the competition, once you walk off that floor, and I've judged competitions, but once you walk off that floor and you're happy, the rest of it's God's.
You're a winner. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're not happy, I wish I'd done. And it, you know, you can tell people, when I walk out on a competition floor, you know the people who've put the work in. But I was lucky with changing my mode of what I was going to do. But you can see the ones, and it's hard graft, it's like our day-to-day working. It's hard graft. But if you've got a passion, it's worth it.
Yeah, yeah. So, on your favourite craft in hairdressing and why? So what's your passion? After all these years now of doing everything, if somebody said you could choose one area that you've to specialise in now, what would it be?
You see, I love long hair. I love it. And it's the movement. It's what I say, the feel appeal. You know, it's like when you graduate, we all know how to put hair up. And a week later, we suddenly don't.
Yeah.
You cut 10 inches off somebody's hair. It's not, no problem. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be fabulous. Unless she mightn't like it, it might be a bit too high, or it might be a bit too low, or it might be a bit too. You can take the pin out and do it again. You can't put 10 inches back on hair.
Yeah, yeah. So you can, it's the maneuverability of judging the client's expression and then kind of going, I know why her face not really happy with that. I can switch that up. Whereas, as you
exactly.
say, the haircut's done, it's done.
It's done. You can't pick it up off the floor and chuck it back on the head.
I can remember a show. I don't remember. It was one of the funny. I still look at it down as one of the funniest times that I moments in my career. And it was yourself. And it's just what I love is the flamboyancy of people within aircraft and in the industry. But I remember introducing you. We were doing the hair hub for the IHF. Hopefully, I'd love the IHF to bring it back to life again, because I enjoyed the event as where you came along and people that had a great career. But I always remember introducing you, and up you came with the trolley right through the crowd going, tea, coffee, duty free. As if you were an air hostess. And it was just a fabulous moment. And just the whole audience just broke the heart laughing. And I just went, you know what, that's what you want. You want people to realize that the person with all the success is just you or I and has fun at the end of the day. So have you got a funny moment from your career that you'd like to share with us? I'm not putting you on the spot.
I can remember thinking back. It's funny that you say that. That just brought a memory back to me. It was in Vicar Street. Again, it was an IHF show. I had drag queens. It was mental. It was before kind of extensional weave coming out. What was I thinking? But it was a great show. You know, I can remember doing a show in Brown Thomas years ago, Paul Callum, makeup artist, Leslie Keane, makeup artist. And going out, and we were doing like, you know, kind of high-end bridal stuff. And Mac was huge at the time. And I always keep a comb in my back pocket. So I went out, and then I was introduced, and I said, okay, we're going to do an alternative bride here this evening, blah, blah, blah. And I go, where's my bloody comb? And I'm looking, it wasn't in my back pocket. And like, nobody ever knows your script. But I thought, I can't leave the stage and go back in looking for a comb. If push comes to shove, I'll just use my fingers. And I said, okay, I know when I came out here, I had a comb with me. Does anybody know where I put it? And this girl in the front row, she's on the trolley. It's the ground. I was just checking that I had your attention before I started. I wasn't checking at all. I had no bloody comb.
That's
where it was.
We learn how to, you know, talk on our feet in their job, because sometimes we get thrown curveballs by the guest or the client in the chair, and we have to react and make it look like, oh, you know, that's the way it was. No, I meant that. You know what I mean?
It's supposed to be like that, yeah.
Like, I've often had that with a client. You come and you go, what'd you say? It's a little bit shorter than I thought. And you're going, yeah, but I like it. And you go, really? So, after 30 amazing years with Peter Mark, where do you think the future goes for Michael? And what would you like to do that you feel you haven't ticked that box yet over the time to come?
Okay, there's a couple of things. So, like, today I'm going with a good friend of mine, Katrina Hanley, a designer. And we work together on producing her shows and her shoots and stuff like that. But she's individual. You know, it's not following trends. She follows what she loves. So what do I love? I don't want to be bricky. I don't care about finger waves. I love interiors. I'd like to pursue that more. Mm. And I love show production. And the Euro Millions, of course.
Windy.
Not even the Irish.
I'd be happy winning Actually, I gave my grandson just an off topic completely, but he noticed a scratch card while on one of the team had given me for my birthday bundle of scratch cards. And he says, "What's that, Grandad?" And I said, "That's can I scratch that?" And I said, "No, it's already scratched. It's a free one." "Oh, what's that?" I said, "I'll get it next time. I'll go into the shop and I'll get a free one for you and you can scratch it." So yesterday, his mum works with me in the salon. I said to Alana, "Look, get that and give it to Fraser. Will you go in the shop?" And last night, he came home, a little video, put it on, and he goes, Grandad, I did, you know what I won €5. And it might as well have been 5 million to him. Yeah. He said, "You're the best ever." And it kind of brings it to reality is that it's the little rewards in life that mean the most to us at the end of the day, isn't it? But it takes us a while to really appreciate what we've achieved in our short careers, you know?
Hugely. And you know what it is, Greg? It's like, say somebody came in for a trial about 2 months ago. And the girl was older starting hairdressing. And I believe if you're older starting hairdressing, you really want it.
Hmm.
And I was watching her, and a lot of the other senior stylists, we all were kind of saying, "God, she's a good one." You know?
Yeah.
She kept herself busy. It was the first day. It's a big salon. And she was on the go all the time. She never stopped for a minute. It's like, if we could find a creative colorist at the moment, that'd be great because of the position there. Who wouldn't want to work in Grafton Street? But I said to her, obviously she was taken on. I said to her about 3 weeks later, I said, "You know, on your first day in the salon," I said, "that must have been tough. Because you don't know where the milk is. You don't know where the toilets are." I said, "You did not stop from the moment you got in to the time you left." And she said, "Oh, thanks." I said, "No, but like all the senior people were saying, dear God, they have to keep her on." And she said, "That's the nicest thing anybody's ever said to me." I said, "No, but it's true. Keep going on the path you're going."
Yeah.
And sometimes don't think it. Say it. Like if somebody, I'd often walk past, say, another stylist's work, and I go, "Oh God, that cut's amazing, or that colour is amazing." And you might think it, but say it. Because then you work it in a very safe zone.
Mm.
Like I take the mick out of my fellow workers as well. I'm kind of going, "She's be man." And then they look at the girl a second time. But it's that client interaction. You know, of kind of going, "We changed the colour, it looks great." So you're going to feel this presence punch that another stylist came up and said, confirmed what they know.
Mm.
"Oh, I love my change." Then somebody goes, "Oh my God, that's amazing."
Yeah.
So sometimes we can be very quick to complain about something or put somebody down. Okay, what's the state of that? Or I wouldn't have done that. But I think, you know, if we appreciate what somebody else is doing and turn around and go, "That was a nice one. That was a good one." Maybe it's just me and my pensioner years.
No, I tell you, I think that's humility and actually being big enough to say that was really good is the best advice you can give. And I think they are good words of wisdom coming from you, Michael. So that's your 7 at 7 done. I've really, really enjoyed it. I wanted you on here for a long time and now I finally got you. And I know technology wouldn't be at your forefront and we had a few little issues there, but you're now a master of it. And we learn every day is a learning day, isn't it? And we get better and better. And you can see where the creativity is in it just by looking behind you there with the art on the wall, the flowers, the whole lot that's there and the interior. Hopefully people will pick up and say, "Oh, I'm wanting that guy in to do a bit of interior work for me." Do you know what I mean? So listen, Michael, from the world of Salon Soul brothers and sisters, I wish you all the best in the future and thank you so much for sharing your story with us this evening.
Greg, thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to our Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters Stylist of Influence interview with Michael Dial of Petermark. If you've enjoyed the interviews, please like, share and subscribe to our channels and our pages. We look forward to hearing from you and we look forward to you giving us a 5-star review. So keep the faith and see you all again soon. Take care.